Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
The following is a class on the universal form, a summary study of 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as it is, given by His Holiness Gopal Krishna Goswami, recorded on 26th December of 1989.
Gopi jana bala bhava dhari. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Anath minandasya gyananjana shalakya chakshir militanyena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovistam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupaka damayam dadati swapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri utapada kamlan shri gurun vaishnavanascha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagina Raguna Tanvitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagina Lalita Shri Vishakha Nitamscha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare So ladies and gentlemen, we hope you enjoyed the kirtan, all our spiritual programs. First start with glorification of the Supreme through the medium of kirtan. So today we are going to discuss the 11th chapter, which is called the Universal Form. Yesterday we discussed the opulence of the Absolute, in which we reviewed Krishna's Supreme Position. And we also ran through the 72 opulences that Krishna describes in the 10th chapter. And if you remember, Krishna has indicated that this is just a partial manifestation of his unlimited opulences. It is not that Krishna only has those 72 opulences and there's nothing beyond that. Now today we are going to discuss the universal form, and as I have told all of you, that it is certainly not possible to cover the entire chapter, every verse thoroughly, but we are attempting to present a proper understanding of the different chapters of the Gita, so at least we know what the proper message of the Bhagavad Gita is. So, in this 11th chapter, Krishna displays His universal form. Arjuna begins this chapter by saying, by hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about the most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has been destroyed. So the living entity's illusion about the nature of the Lord can only be destroyed once he has the fortune of hearing the philosophy. We are all born in ignorance. But then, when we come in contact with a bona fide representative of the Lord, then our illusion is overcome. Arjuna, of course, had the great fortune of personally getting these instructions from Krishna. But even if we have the opportunity to hear these instructions from the representatives of Krishna, then our illusion can also be destroyed. So Arjuna begins this 11th chapter by stating that my illusion is now gone. And he says, I've heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity, and I realize your inexhaustible glories. Chavyayam. Chavyayam means inexhaustible. So Krishna's glories are inexhaustible. You and I may have limited qualities or attributes, but Krishna's glories are inexhaustible. So Arjuna is saying that I have heard your inexhaustible glories, and after hearing your inexhaustible glories, I have understood what? That you are the cause of all causes. We must understand that the Lord is the cause of all causes. And if we understand that the Lord is the cause of all causes, then it is only natural that we turn towards that Supreme Lord for direction and assistance. So Arjuna wants to see how Krishna controls the universe. Arjuna wants to see how Krishna controls the whole universe. So he says, Evam etad yathatva tvam atmanam parameshvara jastam ichami te rupam eshvaranam purushottama. Purushottama means best of the personalities. Purushottama means the best. So there may be so many personalities, but Purushottama means the best of the personalities. So Arjuna says that I know that you are the Supreme, but I want to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. And he wants to see that form of Krishna. Now, within Arjuna's mind, there was never any doubt about Krishna, isn't it? By in the 9th chapter, in the 10th chapter, Arjuna is completely convinced about Krishna. Arjuna has already said, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavittam, Param Bhavam, I accept you as the Supreme. So it is not that Arjuna needs any further convincing. That point has already been made. But Arjuna knew that in future, so many so-called imposters will appear who will call themselves incarnations of God. Therefore, in order to check these so-called incarnations of God, in order to verify whether they are genuine or false, Arjuna is presenting to Krishna the request that he reveal how he enters into this cosmic manifestation. And he says, kindly show your unlimited universal self. He uses the word Yogeshwara Tato Me Tvam. Yogeshwara means the master of mystic yoga. So Krishna has innumerable names, which are all characterized by the different pastimes that he engages in. And one of his names is Yogeshwara, the master of all mystic yoga. So Krishna is gradually getting to the point where he's going to display his universal form. Now, regarding the universal form of the Lord, it must be recognized that the universal form of the Lord, or the Virat Roop, this is actually a temporary form of the Lord. Just like this material manifestation is created and then it is destroyed. So similarly, this universal form is also temporary. It is created and then eventually it is destroyed. But in this universal form, Krishna was able to reveal to Arjuna the entire creation. And as we will see, Krishna had to give Arjuna special vision, as a result of which Arjuna was able to see the universal form of the Lord. However, a devotee of the Lord is not anxious to see the universal form of the Lord. For example, when Krishna was displaying his pastimes in Vrindavan, the cowherd boyfriends of Krishna, they did not ask to see the universal form of the Lord. In fact, they were just attracted to Krishna's beauty. They didn't have to see the greatness in order to surrender to Krishna. They surrendered to Krishna was more out of love and affection. So the universal form of the Lord is not a form that is really worshipped by the devotee. But the universal form of the Lord is used by the devotee to present a check on those who may claim to be incarnations of God but are not God at all. So Krishna was being requested to show his universal form, and Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, O son of Pritha, see now my opulences, hundreds and thousands of very divine and multicolored forms. So Krishna is now beginning to show his universal form. And he says, O best of the Bharatas, see here the different manifestations of the Adityas, Vasus, Rudras, Ashwini Kumaras, and all the other demigods. Behold the many wonderful things which no one has ever seen or heard before you. In other words, this universal form was first shown to Arjuna. Nobody actually before Arjuna had ever seen this universal form. And Arjuna was able to see this universal form of the Lord by just sitting in one place. Now, you may have many advanced scientists. Science has made great progress. But certainly, you don't have a situation where a scientist can sit in one place and he can see everything, isn't it? It is not possible. But Arjuna was able to see the entire universe sitting just in one place. Everything that exists in the upper planets, the lower, the middle, was all visible to Arjuna by the mercy of Krishna. Just see the vision that Arjuna was given. And Krishna says, because you cannot see this with your present eyes, therefore I give you divine eyes. Behold my mystic opulence. So, none of us can ever meet a scientist, or none of us can ever have an instrument which can give us the special vision, as a result of which we can see everything, isn't it? None of you and I can never have that facility. But Krishna, being the Supreme Lord, he gave Arjuna the special vision, divine eyes, as a result of which Arjuna was able to see the universal form of the Lord. And what did Arjuna see? Arjuna saw in that universal form unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, unlimited wonderful visions. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and bore many divine upraised weapons. He wore celestial gardens and garments, and many divine scents was made over his body. All was wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, and all expanding. So the Lord's energy is inconceivable. What Arjuna saw was unlimited mouths, unlimited. You couldn't even count the number of mouths that Arjuna saw. Unlimited eyes. They were unlimited eyes and unlimited wonderful visions. In other words, in the universal form, he saw unlimited things. He saw hundreds of thousands of suns that would rise into the sky, and the radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, when Krishna was displaying the universal form, there was so much effulgence coming out of his body that Arjuna estimates that the effulgence coming out of the body was equal to the effulgence of hundreds of suns. You understand? There was so much effulgence. Actually, it is not possible to estimate the effulgence that was coming out of Arjuna's body. All that Arjuna is presenting here is an imaginable phenomena, that the effulgence coming out from Krishna's body was equal to hundreds of thousands of suns. Just imagine. And please don't think this is just someone's imagination. This is all a reality. And he saw all the planets also situated in the Lord's body. There are many different types of planets. Some are made of gold. Some are made of water. Some are made of earth. Some are made of jewels. Some are very great, some are small, some are made of stone. And Arjuna saw that all these planets were situated in the body of the Lord. And then Arjuna, when he saw this universal form of the Lord, he realized who is Krishna. He realized that Krishna is not an ordinary person. And Arjuna actually felt very embarrassed. He saw all the demigods there. He saw Brahma sitting over there on the lotus flower, Lord Shiva, and all the sages and divine serpents. So divine serpent means Vasuki. Vasuki lies down in the lower region of the universe. And on that Vasuki, there is Garbhadaksha Vishnu. So that is in the lower region. And at the same time he saw Brahma. So Arjuna was able to see everything. Right, everything from the top to the bottom. Arjuna was able to see everything from the top to the bottom, all sitting just in one place. He was sitting just in one place on the chariot. And just imagine, it was not that Arjuna was watching the movie on a 70mm screen. You know, if you're watching a CinemaScope movie on the 70mm screen, then you have the screen all around, and then you can see all this in action. But Arjuna was just sitting with Krishna on a chariot. And just sitting on the chariot, Arjuna was able to see all the planet from top to bottom, all the demigods, unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, everything just situated in one place. So Krishna is being told by Arjuna that your form is difficult to see because of its glaring effulgence, spreading on all sides like blazing fire or the immeasurable radiance of the sun. Yet I see this glowing form everywhere, adorned with various crowns, clubs and this. So Arjuna, just bewildered, looking at this Virat-rup form of the Supreme Lord. And then Arjuna is describing the glories of the Lord. One thing is that a devotee never gets tired of describing the glories of the Lord. Like yesterday, we saw that Arjuna acknowledges the supreme position of the Lord. Again, in the 9th chapter also, we have seen that. So it is not that repetition of the glories of the Lord is a sign of literary weakness. Repetition of the glories of the Lord is relished by the devotee. And the reader or the hearer also enjoys seeing that the Supreme Lord is glorified. So Arjuna describes in a series of verses various characteristics of the Lord that we have already discussed. He says that you are without origin. Now this point we have established to all of you that the Supreme Lord is without origin. If we were to say that there is a date to which the Supreme Lord originated, then he cannot be God. So the Supreme Lord is without origin, middle or end. And his glory is unlimited. It is said in the Vedic scriptures, the Anantasesha. Anantasesha has thousands of tongues. And even with thousands of tongues, he cannot adequately describe the glories of the Supreme Lord. And he has unlimited arms. And Arjuna says, the sun and the moon, these are actually your eyes. So the eyes of the Lord are the sun and the moon. You have the sun and you have the moon. You can't live without the sun and you can't live without the moon. And the sun and the moon represent the two eyes of the Lord. Sometimes people say, where is God? Can you show me God? So our answer is, you can see God at every level, isn't it? Because whether it is day or night, you can definitely see the sun or the moon. So Arjuna is saying, is spread throughout the sky and the planets and all the space within. Seeing this wondrous and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed. So all the planetary systems and the demigods, when they saw this universal form of the Lord, they were all scared. And Arjuna says that all the demigods are surrendering before you and entering into you. Some of them, very much afraid, are offering prayers with folded hands. Hosts of great sages and perfect beings crying, all peace, all praying to you by the Vedic hymns, by singing the Vedic hymns. So in other words, in these verses, Arjuna is acknowledging the universal form of the Lord. He is acknowledging what he is seeing. Arjuna actually in these verses may be a little hard to understand for all of you, but through these verses we can see that the Virat Rup form of the Lord displayed so many opulences and qualities that you can never imagine. So when you meet these so-called imposters who want to claim that they are incarnations of God, it is very easy to test them. All you have to do is ask them if they are in a position to manifest their Virat Roop form. And obviously they will not be in a position to manifest the universal form. Now, another thing, very significant thing that we Arjuna also saw in this battle, he came on this on the chariot and the Virat Roop form, he could also know how the battle of Kurukshetra was going to end. Because, as you know, in all the previous chapters we have seen that Arjuna is constantly hesitating and engaging in this battle. Arjuna doesn't want to engage in this battle for a variety of reasons. He doesn't consider it appropriate to fight against his seniors. He doesn't want to engage in the battle in which all the men will die and the women will be left without anyone to protect them and children without fathers and so on. But Krishna all along has been inducing Arjuna that he must fight, that he must engage in this battle. So Arjuna saw in this, this is very nicely described in verses 26 and 27, all the sons of Dhritarashtra along with their light kings and Bhishma, Drona, Karna and all the soldiers also are rushing into your fearful mouths, and some I see trapped with head smashed between your heads. So we can see that Arjuna, when he saw the universal form, not only did he see all the demigods, not only did he see many planets over there, not only did he see the effulgence of the Lord which is incomparable to anything that we can possibly imagine, but he also saw that the Dhritarashtra and their light kings, all of those who are fighting against the Pandavas, they're all being trapped between the teeth of the Lord. They're all being crushed in the teeth of the Lord. So by this, Arjuna could say that everyone's going to die in this battle and he's going to be victorious. But Arjuna was not at all attracted to the idea of being victorious also, because he was true renunciate. Just like the moths, they dash into the blazing fire, isn't it? And when the moths dash into the blazing fire, what happens? The moth gets burned to death. So just like the moth gets burned to death, Arjuna could see that all these people who have been opposing him, the Kauravas, and they were all going to be destroyed in this battle. And also, not only actually the Kauravas would be destroyed, except for the Pandavas, everybody else was also going to be destroyed in this battle. So by seeing the universal form, Arjuna actually got a good glimpse of what the final outcome of the battle of Kurukshetra was going to be. Now, the Virat Roop form of the Lord is a form of time. And time is the greatest destroyer of the world. Krishna says, time I am, the great destroyer of the world. Just like a man may be very handsome and he tries his best to retain the beauty that he has. But does time let him keep the beauty? Yes, no. No, time will destroy the beauty. You don't want the wrinkles on your cheeks, but time will make sure that gradually the wrinkles appear. You don't want your teeth to fall out, but time will make sure that your teeth fall out and so on. So Krishna says, time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers on both sides will be slain. Now, we have already mentioned this earlier in our discussion in the second chapter, that everybody actually who died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they all had the fortune of going back to Godhead. They all had the fortune of going back to God because they all had the opportunity to see Krishna while dying, you understand? So we cannot say that God is cruel in any way, or why is God encouraging violence? Just like I gave that simple example, when the surgeon takes a knife and cuts the boil, he doesn't do it because of something, because he's envious of you, but he does it for your benefit, isn't it? So when you have a boil with pus, and you press that boil, that boil is the boil is pressed for the benefit of the patient. So similarly, when Krishna engages in this battle, when all these people who died in this battle, they all were able to obtain liberation. So Krishna says, "Tam, I am the great destroyer of the worlds." So if we understand this, the meaning of this one line, "Tam, I am the great destroyer of the worlds," then we will be able to live in material existence with the spirit of detachment. Presently, we are living in the material world in a spirit of attachment. I'm attached to my body. I'm attached to the extensions of my body. I'm attached to my place of residence. I apply to the chair I have. I'm attached to my children, so on. But time takes away everything, isn't it? When we're young, we play with our parents, but then time takes away our parents from us. Then, when the children are young, we're very fond of them. But gradually, time makes sure that the sweetness of youth doesn't remain and the sweetness goes away, isn't it? So we must understand that time is the manifestation of Krishna. And this universal form is the form of time. And it destroys everything. Time destroys everything with the passage of time. They say in the English language, time heals everything. So time heals everything in the sense that with the passage of time you forget everything. But it is not that time solves all your problems, you understand? Just like when somebody dies, we feel very sorry. But then as time passes, we overcome that grief and shock. But it is not that time does not contribute to the miseries of life that we all have to experience. So Krishna has said clearly, "The time I am the great destroyer of the world." And Arjuna was not in favor of this fighting. But Krishna has made it clear that he had to fight. Because they are already dead. Time is destruction. These people have already died. They are vanquished by the desire of the Supreme Lord. So Arjuna must engage in this battle and become an instrument. Nimitta matram bhava savya sachin. Nimitta matram means just become the cause. So Arjuna Krishna says, Nimitta matram bhava savya sachin. Therefore, O Arjuna, get up, prepare to fight and win glory. Conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement. And you can become an instrument in this fight. So, very often we all use the word nimitta matram, isn't it? It's a very common word amongst those who are born in the Hindu faith, nimitta matram. But we must understand the correct meaning of nimitta matram. Nimitta matram cannot be used when you're acting in an activity independent of the desires of the Lord. You can only use the word nimitta matram when you're engaged in an activity which is strictly according to the desires of the Lord. Now, you may say, how do we know what is the desire of the Lord? Isn't it? How do you know that? So what is the desire of the Lord? You can know by having someone such as the bona fide agent of the Lord direct you. Just like in every sphere of life, you need direction. So in spiritual life also you need direction. In spiritual life also, if you have direction, you can make spiritual progress. So, Krishna says, Arjuna, engage in this battle and become my instrument. Just become the cause. So, nimitta matra means when you become the cause for fulfilling a desire of the Lord, which is approved by a bona fide representative of the Lord. So, Krishna is, after showing to Arjuna, in his universal form, that all the enemies were being crushed in his teeth, Krishna is once again telling Arjuna, now you please engage in this battle and fight. Dona, Bhishma, Jayadratha, Karna and all other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. They will kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight and you will vanquish your enemies in this battle. So, the Lord is the cause of all causes. But still the Lord gives the devotee the opportunity to take the credit. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Now in these two verses that we have read to you, Krishna has already said that I have already killed all these soldiers. Isn't it? But he's still saying, you become the nimitta matram. You become the instrument. So Krishna is the doer. Not a blade of grass moves without God's permission. But God gives us the facility to become the instrument and then claim the credit. Just like Krishna says, the dearmost devotee to me is one who is always preaching my glories. So Krishna will give you the facility to preach. And when you go ahead and preach, then by your preaching, you can claim the credit, even though everything is actually being done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we must understand that the goal of life is to become nimitta matra, to become the instrument by which Krishna's wish can be fulfilled, the instrument by which Krishna's policies can be established for the benefit of the whole world. So Sanjay, when he saw all this, he said, O King, after hearing these words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trembling Arjuna offered obeisances with folded hands again and again. He fearfully spoke to Lord Krishna in a faltering voice as follows. So Krishna, when he displayed his universal form and when Arjuna saw that all these enemies also are being killed, they're being crushed in his teeth, Arjuna actually became a devotee in wonder. There are 12 types of rasas that one can exchange with the Lord. You can have different relationships with the Lord. You can have the Lord as a son, as a father, as a lover. One of the rasas is you worship the Lord in wonder. So even though Krishna and Arjuna were friends, and we will see this later on in this chapter, where Arjuna apologizes to Krishna for having had such a familiar relationship which disregarded his supreme position, Arjuna, after seeing this universal display of the Lord, he just struck with complete wonder, isn't it? Like if somebody all of a sudden showed the whole universe to you, you would also be struck with wonder. So Arjuna addresses Krishna with the greatest reverence. He says, O Master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name. So we must understand that when we hear about the transcendental qualities of the Lord, we become joyful. Presently, we are all searching for joy. And in our search for joy, we see movies, we see television, we go to social parties, we try every type of illicit activity. If you read any of these film magazines, you find they always have some scandals about somebody else's private life. Now, we don't really become joyful in reading about all this, isn't it? But Arjuna says, the whole world becomes joyful upon hearing your name. And then it becomes attached to you. Just like yesterday, we discussed that of sacrifices and the chanting of the japa. So why do we chant japa? Of course, we've explained to you several times that japa helps us to cleanse the heart. But another advantage of japa is it enables us to get attached to Krishna. Just like if you're always calling your child's name all the time, then naturally you'll get attached to the child, isn't it? So if you're always calling the names of Krishna, 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 naturally you'll get attached to him. So this is exactly what Krishna, Arjuna is saying over here. Arjuna says, the whole world becomes joyful upon hearing your name. And thus, everybody becomes attached to you. So the demons, however, are afraid of you and they run here and there. So the demons are always scared of the Lord, just like all of you have heard of Kamsa, huh? Kamsa was always scared of the Lord, isn't it? Kamsa was always scared that one of the Lord is going to appear and kill him, isn't it? So, and Hiranyakashipu also was a very powerful demon. He did not want anybody to come to anybody to be more powerful than him. So the demons are always scared of the Lord. Basically in society, you always have two types of devotees, the Asuras and the Suras. The Suras represent those who take shelter of the Lord, and the Asuras represent those who don't take shelter of the Lord. So Arjuna is saying, the demons are running here and there, and the devotees, they become joyful in hearing about you, and as a result of hearing about you, they become attached to you. So hearing about the Lord is very, very important. Please don't think that this is very boring, but actually, just like a child takes the medicine. The child takes the medicine without knowing the potency of the medicine, isn't it? But even when it doesn't know the potency of the medicine works. A child places its hand on the fire without knowing that the fire can burn the hand, isn't it? So similarly, knowingly or unknowingly, anybody who hears the transcendental glories of the Lord becomes joyful. And this is being confirmed by Arjuna. So in verses 37 to 40, Arjuna is using various names to glorify Krishna. You understand? One thing we see that Arjuna is constantly glorifying the Lord through innumerable attributes. He says, you're greater than even Brahma. Why? Because sometimes people think Brahma is the supreme, isn't it? There was once an assembly of great sages, and there was a discussion being held as to who possesses the quality of goodness in the greatest degree. Is it Vishnu, Brahma, or Shiva? So it was decided to send Bhrigu Muni, the son of Brahma, to test them out. So Bhrigu first went to Brahma, his father. And normally when one approaches the father or the spiritual master, one should offer respect. But Bhrigu did not, intentionally. And he saw that Brahma was very angry. And Brahma was about to curse him, get tough on him. But then he said, oh, he's my son, let him go. But he saw the anger. Then when he went to Lord Shiva, he was in deep meditation. Lord Shiva got up from his meditation and came to embrace him. But Bhrigu said, you have all this ash on your body, don't embrace me. Your body is very filthy. He purposely insulted him with his words. So Shiva was also very angry, but then Parvati checked him. And then he went to Vishnu, who was lying down and being massaged by the devotees, the Lakshmis. And he went and placed his feet on the chest of the Lord. And when he placed his feet on the chest of the Lord said, oh, how fortunate I am. The feet of a Brahmana are on my chest. So when Bhrigu went back and reported his experience, I'm just summarizing the story because it's a very long story. So when Bhrigu went back and presented his experience to the great sages, they all concluded that Vishnu is the supreme. So some of us, due to lack of complete spirit Vedic knowledge, we falsely think that the demigods and the Supreme Lord are on the same level. But that we've already discussed in our earlier chapters, how the Supreme is different from the demigods. And also those who think that Brahma is the Supreme because he is the creator are also falsely informed. Just like, for example, the scorpion. The scorpion lays its eggs on the rice, isn't it? Now, if someone goes and says, oh, the rice has given birth to the eggs, it won't make much sense, isn't it? So any other person, or the scorpion laid the eggs on the rice and went away. So for us to say that just because Brahma is the creator, Brahma is the supreme because he is the supreme engineer, it's not the proper understanding. Because Brahma creates based on the authority delegated to him by Krishna. Just like a chief architect of a building or a chief engineer, he may design a building, but he'll design a building based on the authority given to him by the owner of that building, isn't it? So that's exactly Brahma's position. So Arjuna is addressing Krishna through various spiritual names that highlight his supreme position. He says, greater than Brahma, you are the original creator. Why is Krishna being described as the original creator? Because after all, it is Krishna who even created Brahma. So why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you? Why then? He means demons. Why are the demons running away from you? Arjuna is saying. You are after all the cause of all causes, the refuge of the universe. And you are transcendental to this material manifestation. And again he says, you're the original personality of Godhead, the oldest. We have already said from the Brahma Samhita, Adhyam Purana Purusham Navyavanam Cha. Now you are the oldest entity, you still appear very youthful. So God is the oldest, the ultimate sanctuary of this manifested cosmic world. You're the knower of everything and all that is knowable. You're the supreme refuge above the material modes, all limitless form. This whole cosmic manifestation is pervaded by you. So we must understand, and we will discuss this in great detail when we go to chapter 13. Now actually, with the termination of chapter 11 today, you will see most of the opulences of the Lord are finished. You know, in chapter 10 we had the opulences, in chapter 9 we had the opulences. From chapter 12 onwards, the Gita takes a different turn. this discussion on chapter on devotional service, the modes of nature, the enjoyer, and so on. So the opulences of the Lord will end with the end discussion in this chapter. So Krishna is being described to be the supreme knower. Krishna knows everything. God knows everything. You and I may just know what is happening in our field, but the government knows everything, what's happening in everyone's field, isn't it? You and I may just know our plot of land, but the surveyor, he knows all the plots of land. So Krishna is described as the supreme knower. You are air. Why is Krishna being described as the air? Because nobody can live without air. You can't live without air. For example, these days, there's such a hue and cry about pollution, isn't it? Just now when we were coming from Juhu, we could see there smells so much pollution. And nobody likes pollution, isn't it? Because you can't live without air. Otherwise, you can just close your car, but you can't live without air. You have to breathe. So Arjuna says, you are air. So we saw yesterday also the various opulences of the Lord that were listed. These are all manifestations of the glories of the Lord. And the various opulences just go to highlight how everything significant that we need for our survival is a manifestation of Krishna. So your air, the supreme controller, your fire, your water. Fire also is very important because without fire you can't even digest your food, isn't it? And your water. Nobody can live without water, isn't it? You may have all the money, you may have everything, like in many parts, you can construct a big tall skyscraper, but you don't have water, then you can't do anything. You are Brahma, the first living creature, you're the great grandfather. So Arjuna says, you're so great, I'm going to offer you my respects. And he says, I offer you my respect from the front, from behind, and from all sides. So Arjuna is completely convinced, out of loving ecstasy for Krishna, his friend. Arjuna says, I'm going to offer you respect from all sides. Now, there is no doubt within Arjuna about Krishna's greatness. And Arjuna, as we mentioned earlier, apologizes to Krishna. What did he apologize for? He says, Krishna, I have addressed you in the past as, O Yadava, O my friend. But you are not an ordinary person. Now please forgive me because I've acted in this way due to madness or in love. Plus, due to our friendship, I've dishonored you many times. Sometimes in an intimate relationship, you may dishonor someone. And he said, just like when we were relaxing, we were lying down in the same bed, or we sat and ate together. But please excuse me for all these offenses that I have committed, because you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I, due to my foolishness, not recognizing your greatness, have acted in this manner. And Arjuna goes on to say how Krishna is the father of the cosmic manifestation and the cause of all causes. So Arjuna, after describing the mighty glories of the Lord in a series of verses, falls at the feet of Krishna and offers him all respects. And he says, just like a father tolerates his son, isn't it? The son is so mischievous, but the father may be strict, but he still tolerates. It doesn't mean that we should not be genuine in our atonement. Atonement is the process by which we apologize for the sins that we do. But our atonement must be genuine. Here we have the example of an eternal companion of the Lord, namely Arjuna, who when he saw the mistakes that he has made in addressing the Supreme Lord, he approaches the Lord for forgiveness, isn't it? So we also may approach the Lord for forgiveness, but then if we are asking the Lord for forgiveness, and again we are coming back and committing the same mistakes, then what is the use, isn't it? Our forgiveness must be very real. Just like in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a very nice dialogue that takes place between Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. And Shukadeva Goswami says that just like a tree may get burnt, but as long as the roots of the tree are still there below the soil, the tree is going to grow again. So we must uproot the roots. Then they will be, if you uproot the roots, then you can stop the tree from growing, isn't it? So Arjuna, we see, he has realized his mistakes and he's apologizing by falling at the feet of the Lord. So similarly, in our own personal conduct, we may see that we have indeed made a great mistake. But then we must genuinely rectify that mistake. Not that we rectify the mistake and then again commit the same offense and so on. We should not professionalize the process of atonement. Just like some people go to the church or the place of worship, they apologize and again they come back and again they start sinning. So this professional atonement should be abandoned. So we can benefit by meditating on Arjuna's approach towards the Supreme Lord. Now, Arjuna has got bewildered. Arjuna got bewildered when he saw the universal form. But then he regained his composure, he realized that this is Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and God can do anything. God can do anything. And it was Arjuna who pushed Krishna in the beginning of this chapter to display his universal form, isn't it? Actually, if you meditate on the Gita, you'll see how scientific the presentation of Gita's philosophy is. Like in the 9th chapter, Krishna declares his opulences, but in the 10th he goes into greater detail. Now Arjuna is already convinced in the 10th chapter that he is supreme, but still Arjuna knows that other people may not be convinced. So just to convince others that Krishna is supreme, not just in theory. You know, you can write a nice article that God has these features, that features, that features, but it may not be a reality. So just to prove that what Krishna is the supreme, this is not just a theory or a philosophical presentation, but also in reality, Arjuna pushes Hare Krishna to come to the point where he displays his universal form. Now after having seen the universal Viratru form, after having acknowledged the greatness of Krishna and having apologized to Krishna for the offenses that he has committed in his unceremonious behavior, Arjuna is now telling Krishna, you please revert back to your original form. Now here again, Arjuna has a reason. The reason is, nobody else can do this. Isn't it? Nobody else can in the first place show his universal form. And then, certainly nobody can convert himself from his universal form to a four-handed form and then to a two-handed form, isn't it? You just don't have those magicians. Unless you have trick cameras and all these photography experts, then you can make believe and show something like they've probably done in the Mahabharata TV serial. But in reality, no one can actually ever do this, isn't it? So, now Arjuna says, please show me a four-handed form with helmeted head and club, wheel and conch and lotus in your hands. I want to see you in that form. So the four-handed Narayan form of the Lord is present in every spiritual planet. And Arjuna is requesting Krishna, please show me your four-handed form. So, sometimes some commentators have said that this four-handed form of the Lord was also shown by the Lord when he approached Duryodhan to make peace. But the answer is that Krishna did not show the complete form that was shown to Arjuna, that was to Duryodhan. The complete four-handed form was shown by Krishna to Arjuna, which was full of unlimited and glaring effulgence. So when Krishna heard Arjuna's request to please convert himself to this four-handed Narayan form, he very willingly did it, and that form was full of unlimited effulgence, which could not even be visualized. Then Krishna said, O best of the Kurus, no one before you has seen the universal form of mine. For neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by severe penances, can I be seen in this form in the material world. Now this is a very significant verse. This verse goes to prove how God can be understood. An underlining theme in all our presentations has been that it is only through the path of devotion can you understand God. Sometimes people become very expert scholars in the Sanskrit language and they think that they can understand God. But Krishna says, no, not just by studying the Vedas. Just like in the Brahma Samhita, Krishna says, Vedesa durlabha madurlabha matma bhakto govinda madhi purusam tamam hamajami. If you're just trying to understand me through the Vedic study, it will not be possible. But if you become my devotee, then you can understand. and nor by performing sacrifices. So we may perform many types of sacrifices, have big havans and call the Brahmins and do big yajnas, still you can't understand. But if you take to the yajna of chanting, which is the recommended process that we discussed yesterday, then you can. And charity. A man becomes rich, he thinks he has a lot of money, he can throw money around and buy his name in front of every hospital, educational building, road and so on. But just by giving charity, you cannot also understand the Supreme Lord. And nor by severe penances can you actually understand God. So you can understand God, what Krishna is leading to is through the path of devotion. And a devotee of the Lord cannot accept a false incarnation to be a real incarnation. Just like, I'll tell you a story very quickly. Actually, there's so many stories in the Vedic scriptures. But because we are trying to finish one chapter in each session, it is impossible to relate these spiritual stories to all of you. Because, you know, you need at least an hour to just to cover the chapter. So, as I made a statement that the devotee does not accept a false incarnation. Once, about 100 years ago, there was an imposter in the province of Orissa. This is a real story. He was claiming that he is the incarnation of Krishna. And he was having his Rasa Leela with the girls and so on, and all the rich people of the town were giving his daughters and wives to play with. But one of the district magistrate in that province was a great devotee by the name of Thakur Bhakti Vinod. Actually, Thakur Bhakti Vinod is one of the spiritual masters in the line of disciplic succession, a great grandfather. So he knew that this man was not a real incarnation of Krishna. So he had him arrested and thrown him in jail because he was a magistrate. Now, when he had him thrown in jail, by coincidence, all of Thakur Bhakti Vinod's wife and his 12 children, they all felt very sick. They were virtually on their deathbed. And the whole town came to Thakur Bhakti Vinod. He was a very reverend man in Jagannath Puri, Orissa. And said, because you've committed this crime of putting God in jail, now you're getting the punishment. But Thakur Bhakti Vinod knew from the pages of the scriptures what are the qualities of a genuine incarnation. But he did not budge at all. And in the end, his family members all recovered. And the so-called false god committed suicide. So, the one who is educated spiritually, he knows whom to accept as God and whom not to accept. Just because somebody does some magic and produces some dust or some rasgullas, he doesn't accept him as God. If somebody has the capacity to do some magic and produce some rasgulla or dust, then certainly the magician can work overtime and produce the food that we need. You read in the papers that the government is importing the edible oils. So no need to import, just tell these magicians to work overtime, isn't it? So obviously the point is that one who is spiritually enlightened, he just doesn't accept anyone to be God unless it is tested. And we have the ultimate test in the Bhagavad Gita. And the ultimate test is the display of the Virat Roop. And from the display of the Virat Roop, then Krishna comes and shows his four-handed form. And after showing his four-handed form, Arjuna goes a step further. He says, now I want to see a two-handed form. He wants to see Krishna in his normal form. Actually, if you remember, when Krishna appeared in front of Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house, he also appeared in the four-handed form, isn't it? But then, when he was requested by his parents, please, 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 revert to your normal two-handed form, because Kamsa may find out who you are, then he became a normal baby. But the point is that Krishna, because he's God, he can easily expand himself and he can revert himself to any form that he may desire. So Arjuna requested Krishna for his four-handed form and thus his two-handed form. And then, when he saw his two-handed form, Arjuna said, I am now composed in mind and I am restored to my original nature. In other words, Arjuna became very happy when he saw the two-handed form of Krishna. And Arjuna was told by Krishna that even the demigods are seeking the opportunity to see this form which is so dear. See, even the demigods, we have explained to you that the demigods are empowered administrators. There are 33 crore empowered administrators who have the responsibility for taking charge of different departments of the management of the universal affairs. So even the demigods are struggling to see this form of the Lord. In fact, Krishna, in the Vedic scriptures, we understand that this earthly planet on which you and I are today living, this earthly planet is the most auspicious planet for cultivating love of God. Because on the other demigod planets, the material opulences are so great that the desire to serve the Lord doesn't even develop. And in the lower planets, the suffering is so great. Just like I can tell you from my own experience in preaching to people in different parts of the world, like in America and Western Europe, there's so much of opulence today that people don't surrender to God so easily. And in the countries which at one time had a communist background, now of course communism has been shot dead very fast, faster than anybody thought, but anyway, the countries which didn't have the same level of opulence as America or Western Europe, people would surrender to God faster. So, when you have a lot of opulences, these opulences become your enemy. Just like in the Vedic scriptures it is said that wealth becomes your enemy. We are all hankering after wealth, but again it is wealth that makes us forget the goal of life. Rich, if you have a rich man, he's so proud of his wealth that he thinks money can buy everything, and why should I bow down before God, or why should I go in front of a sadhu? Let the sadhu come and bow down before me. In Kali Yuga, you see the sadhu is going and touching the feet of the big man. It's the other way around. So, because that wealth makes one completely proud and forget his real identity. So, Krishna, when he displayed his two-handed form, actually, it gave Arjuna very, very great pleasure. And Krishna makes it, and Arjuna says that only by worship can one actually understand you. And Krishna concludes this 11th chapter by giving Arjuna two important instructions. He says, Bhaktyato ananyaya shakya aham evam vidho Arjuna gya gyatam drashtam cha tapena praveshtam cha parantapa. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am standing before you and can thus be seen directly. So, undivided devotional service, this is important. When we are serving the Lord, when we are approaching the Lord, we should be single-pointed and we should be determined. And if we are single-pointed and determined, just like in mature life, when you want to make a mature life a success, you are determined, single-pointed. Come what may, I must make a profit. Isn't it? The student is single-pointed in the case in the examination days. So similarly, we have to be single-pointed that regardless of what it is, we're going to engage in devotional service. And we've already established in all our lectures that devotional service is something that can be executed in every ashram of life. Like yesterday somebody asked a question, if you can do devotional service in the Grihastha ashram, then why should somebody take sannyas? Isn't one of you asked that question? So, of course, it doesn't mean that because devotional service can be done in the Grihastha ashram, we don't need to take sannyas or be a brahmachari. But the point is that the Grihastha ashram can also be utilized to establish a relationship with God. After all, we should not forget that Arjuna was also a Grihastha. Arjuna was not a sannyasi. But Arjuna is being induced by Krishna again and again and again to take to the path of devotion. So Krishna says, one who engages in devotional service, free from the contamination of fruitive activities. Fruitive activities are karma yoga as we described to you yesterday. Karma yoga means you know that Krishna is supreme, but and you follow the Vedic rituals, but your goal is to get sense pleasure, get some material benefit. But Krishna says, free from fruitive activities and mental speculation. Mental speculation, also we explained yesterday, is the process of Jnana Yoga. You know, God is supreme, Krishna is supreme, but instead of accepting the Bhagavad Gita as a basis for understanding the supreme, you want to speculate on the nature of the supreme. And Krishna says, he works for me, making me the supreme goal of life. And he's friendly to every living being. Friendly to every living being means respecting all the living beings as children of the Lord. Why are we vegetarians? Why do we offer everything to Krishna? Because Krishna is Aham Bija Pradapita, the seed-giving father of all living entities. Therefore, a devotee of the Lord is friendly to all living entities. When Prahlad Maharaj was in school, he was being trained by his teachers to have friends and enemies. But Prahlad said, I'm not interested in this friends and enemies. To me, everyone's my friend. I have no enemy. So Krishna says, one is friendly to every living entity. He can certainly come to me. So, Krishna, in this 11th chapter, at Arjuna's request, he has shown his universal form, and Arjuna was able to see the whole universal form sitting in one place, just on the chariot. And what did he see in the universal form? All the planets, all the living entities, and he saw unlimited mouths. Unlimited. Everything he saw was unlimited. And the effulgence of the Lord was equal to thousands of suns. And after seeing all this, Arjuna requested our Krishna to excuse him for all the mistakes that he's committed. He said, now you please revert to your four-handed form, then again to his two-handed form. And Krishna concludes this with the instruction that by undivided devotional service, can you approach me? And Arjuna has also already declared that the whole world becomes joyful upon hearing your holy names, and they become attached to you by hearing your glories. So if you, the more you hear about Krishna, the more attached you will become. Just like in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Parikshit Maharaj was hearing the Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, he got so attached that even though he had not eaten or drunk any water, he said, please go on describing more and more and more. So with this, we end our discussion on the 11th chapter called The Universal Form. Hare Krishna.